Chapter 13. Plasma Ants. Despite the dream, which Rick did his best to push aside, he woke up rested. He had so many memories of the specific techniques used in the defensive events that he actually struggled to find his normal aura. Fortunately, by the time H appeared to spar with him, Rick had mostly mastered himself. "Are they all like that?" he asked before H could start fighting him. His mentor glanced at him briefly, then shook his head. "Not at all. Here or in the USA, it's a commercial sporting event, an agreement with local authorities that's intended to earn money. But in Siberia, all but a few days are pure combat events. There, the biggest draws are the double elimination tournaments. In the Nokan Empire, there's more ceremony and a focus on traditional events."
"I see what you mean about me needing more than one event."
"Right now, what you need is to become competent enough to compete at anything." H scowled and cracked his knuckles. "Are we going to fight or not?"
After another afternoon of being battered, Rick ate some more nutrient packs and supplements before settling into his usual routine. Now that he'd gone outside once, however, he found himself thinking about it again. He could easily do some of his exercises and walk, so it might be nice to see the city. Eating something local, or anything other than the nutrient packs, would also be nice. For a moment, he considered it, thinking it would likely be extremely inexpensive, but then remembered they were in a rich part of the city. Even street food might not be cheap here. Still, since the bug had gotten into his system, Rick decided to head out to the roof for his meditation. He'd only heard a helicopter land outside once or twice in the time they were there, so he assumed it would be relatively peaceful. Sure enough, he found the roof empty. After enjoying the view and the setting sun, Rick sat down to begin his usual routine. It went well enough at first, the sunlight and breeze providing a refreshing change of setting. He found his mind wandering, reprimanded himself, then realized that his internal lucra movements hadn't been even slightly disrupted. That meant it was easier to think while training, which was a good thing, but it left him with a lot of time to fill.
"Hey! Yo, Rick, this way!"
The voice didn't disrupt his training, but it certainly surprised him. Rick glanced around the empty rooftop first and saw no one. Only when he looked further did he spot a figure crouching just over the edge, apparently having climbed up the wall. Ragest grinned and waved with one arm.
"Hey, I wanted to talk to you, so I figured I'd just come up. I'll just—"
He easily pulled himself over the edge and promptly struck a wall of aura that burst up so quickly it sent him flipping backward. Rick leapt to his feet and rushed to the side, staring down multiple stories to where Ragast had barely grabbed onto a balcony on the opposite building. Though he looked dazed, he managed a vague wave.
"Didn't see the defenses!"
"There's no need to climb up," Rick called down. "I'll just meet you out front." Nodding weakly, Ragast began struggling his way down. Rick shook his head, then headed back into his rooms. There was nothing he really needed to do to prepare, so he just used his room key to lock up everything and then headed into the hallway. Though still unfamiliar, it was easy to find the elevator he'd used before, which took him directly down to the hotel lobby. It was rather nice, but he barely bothered to look at it, more curious about what this was about. Aside from trying to sneak in, Ragast had seemed relaxed, so it was likely nothing urgent. Still, his curiosity was on high alert. Ragast loitered on the street outside, little worse for the wear despite running straight into the barrier. He saw Rick and smiled broadly.
"Hey, it looked like you were doing your usual training, just like me. What do you say we cut out and do something fun instead?"
"Something fun?" Rick glanced around, as if H or Alger were going to swoop down to forbid them. But they were adults, and there was nothing stopping them from using their time how they wanted. "I guess you might have been here before, so you know the city?"
"No, they all blur together for me. I just remember which godweight we're officially under, which right now is everybody or the world sculptor."
Ragast hit him on the shoulder and gestured down the street.
"Come on, let's go. I heard an amazing rumor I want to check out, and everybody else is too boring to go with me."
After a pause, Rick decided to go, and they began walking down the street at a brisk pace. Who was the everybody else who wouldn't come?
"All the junior competitors who were participating in this showdown, of course. Looks like your mentor is putting in some extra money to get you up to speed, but they don't spend that much every time. Usually the host city puts us all up in the same hotel. It's pretty cool, just most of them want to hang around and do boring things.
Yeah, I can imagine. I didn't realize there were so many sports-like events, and no offense to them, but that's not as interesting to me.
Oh, full offense to them. Play fighting like that is just pointless.
Your event was cool, though, Rick said. He'd intended to get closer to Regis to learn more about Alger, but it was actually proving easy to talk to the guy. I don't think I'm up for it yet, but I could see myself participating later.
You saw? Yeah, that was awesome. I thought he had me at the end there, but...
Regis eagerly began talking about the exact details of the event, occasionally pumping a fist in the air. That proved much easier conversation, because whatever else was different between them, they could easily talk about Lucrum. It was interesting to get Regis's view on the matches from the previous night. His view of fighting was extremely straightforward, but that didn't mean it was inaccurate. There were actually a few nuances to the fight that Rick had completely missed while watching. As they continued talking, Rick enjoyed finally getting a street-level view of the city. He'd read that most of South Africa's cities had been built in several steps during different eras, with major economic divides between them. Their current neighborhood was extremely upscale and could have been almost any city except for slightly different clothing and appearances. But when he looked closer, he noticed signs of the nation's past. When they began passing residences, he saw that the gates around them were not merely for privacy. They were reinforced by Lucrum and designed to endure a heavy assault. Some of them even had active aura barriers, which must have been incredibly expensive to maintain at all times. Realizing that he was getting lost in his own thoughts, Rick decided to bring Regis into them. I've only been doing a little research on South Africa, so I'm still figuring things out. I've read that some people think the old government is still essentially unchanged, despite the changes to the legislature. What do they call it? Well, the lawmaking group.
What?
Regis stared at him as if he was speaking a different language. You know, the South African Civil War? Rick felt as though he was making some sort of massive political blunder and hastened on. I mean, I don't know very much about it, but there was a big conflict between natives, colonists, and Nokans. He trailed off as he saw that Regis was giving him an utterly blank look. Suddenly, the other man shook his head sharply.
Look, I really don't get into politics. It bores the hell out of me.
Ah, that's fair. In the awkward lull that followed, Rick sought for something else. I've actually been wanting to go out myself, but I read that I'd get cheated if I tried to pay in Lucrum. But if I want to turn dollars into... They're called Rand, right? Do you know how to get a good exchange rate?
Exchange what?
As he received another blank look, Rick felt an uneasy realization beginning to dawn on him. He played it off with a smile, but instead of simply enjoying the conversation, he began to feel out the younger man. Like it was a verbal battle, though he told himself that Regis wasn't his opponent. Not only did Regis not care about the exchange rate, he claimed to be unaware of the concept of currencies aside from lucrum or dollars. Rick started to think that he was being mocked, yet the blank looks from the other man seemed so sincere. As Rick turned the conversation in different directions, he began to believe it. When the subject was training or fighting, Regis could speak at great length. Other entire disciplines seemed to be entirely empty for him, boring and irrelevant. It turned out that Regis didn't listen to music and had never read a book that wasn't a training manual. He did watch movies, but only martial arts flicks with a heavy focus on lucrum. Rick thought that surely he must have other hobbies or interests, yet came up empty time and time again. He knew that some people like that were mocked as lucrum heads, but he found his attention turning inward. That word had been thrown at him back in school, and it was true to a degree. Before a few months ago, he'd had no idea that the Five Peerless were still a relevant part of global politics. Though it was slightly disconcerting to talk to someone like Regis, he wondered how many people felt that way about him. Abruptly, Regis's face lit up with anticipation, and he swiveled to the side. Rick had been paying less attention to their surroundings, but now saw that there was a park within the city. It was filled with squat trees he thought were called baobabs, but it was still obviously a park, with a few benches and trails near the street and denser areas within. Regis marched straight into it.
We're almost there, Rick. I heard that every day at dusk there's an old woman who offers a lucrum challenge to anyone tough enough to endure it.
Wait a minute. Rick jogged to catch up with him as they plunged into the mostly empty park. So when you said we should take a break from normal training, you meant to do other training. I mean, obviously, what else would be worth our time? Before there was any chance to answer, Ragast hit him on the shoulder and thrust a hand forward.
There she is! Don't screw this up!
Ahead of them, seated under a particularly thick baobab, was an old woman. For a horrible split second, Rick thought it was Granny Whitney, then realized that it was patently obviously not. The woman was dark-skinned and wearing a colorful robe and sash, so clearly it was just past traumas flashing back. In front of her sat a table with a covered dark pot in the center, and little else.
You two young men look like you're here for the challenge.
She had a low voice with an accent Rick could only assume was local. Though she didn't rise when they approached, she smiled up at both of them.
But I will warn you, most fail immediately. Some even risk death.
We're not afraid. Ragast reached down to jab at the pot. What's the challenge?
A rite of passage from a certain tribe that shall remain nameless. Through this challenge, young fighters prove themselves to be true warriors, if they can endure the wrath of nature.
The old woman uncovered the pot, and Rick immediately looked in, only to recoil. The interior was swarming with blue-colored ants. Ragast bent down to peer at them, much closer than Rick wanted to get. What are these?
Plasma ants. One of the few insects that can use lucrum. Instead of generating aura, they naturally create an ether venom within them. Humans are too large for it to kill, but their venom produces a pain that has reduced many a grown warrior to sobbing.
With deft fingers, the woman slid a stick into the edge, somehow retrieving only a single one of the ants. It ran along the length of her stick, snapping its mandibles as if enraged, but she calmly shifted the stick so that it never touched her fingers.
For a fee of a mere 100 lucrum, you can test yourself against them. But it would be irresponsible for me to let you try without understanding the pain of their poison. First, try a single bite. I must warn you that 90% of all who try give up after one bite. So I insist on receiving payment first.
Sure, whatever. I've got to try this.
Ragast pulled a marble from his pocket and dropped it on the table. It looked large enough to hold more than 100 lucrum, and the woman snatched it up quickly. But before Ragast could reach out to the branch, Rick stepped in. You're really going to just do this?
Why not?
Ragast grinned at him.
Don't tell me you're scared of a few ants, are you? This might be our only chance to experience something like this.
But you know nothing about her. Just where did you hear this rumor? If someone wanted to assassinate you, do you know how easy it would be for them to set up something like this?
They'd be an idiot to assassinate me like this. I'll fight anyone who wants it.
Ragast again tried to reach for the stick, but Rick grabbed his arm. The old woman simply watched them in amusement, happy now that she had received her payment. Rick didn't think it was really an assassination, just that the whole thing might be some sort of scam. Still, it was obvious that Ragast was going to do it no matter what. Rick decided that it would be safer for him to try first, since his defensive corps had adapted to a few venomous snakes in the refuge. He reached out to take the branch and braced his arm as the ant ran toward his fingers. As soon as it reached his hand, the ant bit down hard. To his surprise, its tiny mandibles managed to poke through his defensive corps. Then he felt a stinging flame rush through his entire hand. His arm convulsed on instinct, sending the branch tumbling to the ground. For a moment, Rick's entire world was consumed with the white-hot flame of pain coursing up his arm. When he became aware again, his teeth were grinding against each other painfully. His hand still burned, but less so. He noticed that the old woman had caught the branch before it fell, and that Ragast was looking at him with a smile.
So you wanted it for yourself, huh? That's the spirit the others are missing. I knew I liked you. Do the ants have enough poison for both of us?
Venom,
the old woman said. When Ragast stared at her blankly, she sighed and flicked the ant back into the pot.
Plasma ants can bite a great many times. The challenge, of course, is not to be bitten a single time, but to stick your hand into the pot. Once you do, you can shake off the ants. but anyone who cries out from the pain or kills any of the ants is known to be weak.
That's so badass.
Ragast looked like he wanted to plunge his hand into the pot right then, but restrained himself.
You going to do this, Rick?
Stupid as it seemed, Rick thought that he was. Now that he had experienced the pain, he was fairly confident that it couldn't be fatal. An untrained person might die from the shock of the pain, but though it was a worse sort of burning than he'd felt before, he knew pain, and this might be his only chance to receive the attack of a rare creature like the plasma ants. So in the end, Rick plunged his hand into the pot. Instantly, it was swarmed by ants, viciously biting him from all sides. The pain was nearly as bad as before, but this time he could concentrate through the pain. He let the dark blood kettle rise along with his defensive core, trying to absorb the ether being injected into him. Though it wasn't easy, the ants obligingly helped by injecting yet more. Rick grimaced, barely avoiding a cry of pain. His defenses had blunted it at first, but now the burning was beginning to penetrate. Dimly, he realized that he was supposed to withdraw his hand, but he was so focused on trying to overcome the countless tiny attacks that he kept his hand inside. It was getting worse, and he didn't know how long it could last. Suddenly, his hand was wrenched from the pot, aura sliding down his arm. Rick was nearly blind from the pain, but he realized that there had been a tickling sensation running up his arm as the ants climbed higher. Not wanting to lose her precious insects, the old woman had removed his hand and swept the ants back into the pot. Staggering away, Rick looked over his now clean hand. It was actually bleeding from some of the bites, and his skin was flushed an unhealthy blue. The ache following the burning pain was growing, and he had a feeling that he'd be paying for that decision for a while. But it might have been worth it. His defensive core had very successfully absorbed the venom, so given enough time, he'd be able to defend against any similar attacks. The woman was giving him a disapproving look while Ragast whooped. Rick was too delirious to focus much, but he saw that Ragast tried next, practically punching his fist into the jar. He grimaced and growled as if he could intimidate the ants, finally pulling out his arm and shaking them back into the jar.
The two of you.
She had been calm up to that moment, but now the old woman stared at them with something strange in her eyes. Like shock, but there was something else there.
You're strange foreigners, I can see that. I haven't seen something like that in years. You deserve something special.
What's that?
Ragast asked. Rick was still busy massaging his hand and didn't really register.
Just a little gift, something that was once given to the most promising warriors.
The woman unrolled part of her sash and unveiled a pair of thin clay vials.
I don't suggest you take these now, not after enduring the plasma ends, but I think the two of you just might be able to make better use of them than this old woman.
With that, she gave them both an odd bow. Then she covered her pot, lifted her table, and began to hobble away, disappearing further into the park. Rick stared after her in disbelief, then realized that Ragast was already unstoppering his vial to drink.
Ragast, she said not to do that.
Yeah, but the ants weren't so bad,
he said, though he reluctantly closed the vial.
I suppose it's good to follow the procedures when it comes to training. This is yours, by the way.
Rick automatically took the vial he was handed, but didn't let it distract him.
You were really going to just drink something you were given by a complete stranger.
Come on, Rick, live a little. Things will work out in the end. If those ants were any indication, I think this will definitely make us stronger.
Though Rick was skeptical, he had to admit that his defensive core had benefited from enduring the plasma ants. Ragast turned around and left the park, the entire trip having been for that sole purpose. Rick followed, marshaling his thoughts before he spoke again. At least talk to someone about this, Rick advised. The potion she gave us could be addictive, or it could cause some illness only she can cure, or a lot of other things. At least figure out what a mysterious liquid is before drinking it.
You really think a nice old lady like that was evil? Come on, Rick, don't be dumb.
If you knew... No, that doesn't matter. Do you really make decisions like this all the time? How has that not backfired yet?
Ragast looked back at him and shook his head.
You might not be a coward, Rick, but you need to be bolder about these things. If you're open to them, good things in life will come to you. If we listened to you, we'd never have experienced a great challenge. And even if she had been trying something against us, we'd have found some way to win. If you stay focused on your goal, you'll definitely make it.
Everything Rick had experienced suggested that the exact opposite was true. The world was cruel and unfair, without the slightest sense of justice in how it treated anyone. Yet Regis was almost his age, and somehow had never gotten a bitter lesson in that. Maybe he actually led a blessed life, or maybe Rick was just cursed. Since we're walking all the way back, Rick had been planning to wait, but based on that experience, decided to go for it now. How long have you been working with Alger?
Oh, like 10 years. He scouted me when I was a teenager, but he didn't accept me right away. No, he made me prove myself first, because he cares whether or not people have the spark. But I beat every challenge he put in my way and exceeded his expectations, so now he's become my mentor.
Your mentor? You didn't live anywhere near Branton, did you?
Admittedly, he wasn't there all that often, but he's given me some great gifts, and he always has the best ideas for training. My main offensive Lucor was designed by him. He said that he'd been waiting for the right person to give it to.
Huh. Rick stared at the other man, searching for some hint to something he couldn't even name. Does Alger ever seem weird to you, like he has some other motive? Regest looked like the idea had never occurred to him.
What do you mean? He just wants to raise a generation of warriors with more fighting spirit. I mean, if you listen to him, he's clear about that. Do you have something against him? Alger told me that you weren't very cooperative, but he said you had a warrior spirit. Actually, that's part of why I wanted to become friends.
Alger had practically sent Regest to become friends? For a moment, Rick was the one to stare blankly, trying to figure out what any of this could mean. Logically, Alger might be trying to lure him back under his control indirectly, since his direct requests had been rebuffed. Yet Rick couldn't help but think that he was missing something. All too soon, they were in front of his hotel again. Regest flipped his clay vial into the air and cheerfully caught it with one hand.
This was a cool evening, Rick. Man, I want to fight you, but I guess it wouldn't be a good fight yet.
Yeah, I have a lot of training to do. And thinking.
Don't let me interrupt your training, but if you keep competing in the junior showdown, we should definitely hang out more often.
With that, Regest turned to go, his jog becoming a sprint that sent him blurring away down the street. There were no high-speed lanes here, cars and pedestrians simply zipping around one another chaotically. They couldn't match the chaos of Rick trying to sort through his thoughts. It had grown dark, and the night was cool, but his body still burned with residual pain. Worse than that, with unanswered questions. Chapter 14. Hasty Preparations. Part of Rick was certain that something would go horribly wrong or he would get into trouble and lose his position. Yet H gave no sign of noticing the absence, and in the morning the swelling on his hand had entirely subsided. Rick was used to recovering quickly, but that surprised him. Still, he decided that it would be best to be direct with his mentor. H might not want to be personal, but Rick thought he would appreciate being bluntly informed. So when he arrived for their afternoon sparring, Rick explained what had happened and showed him the clay vial.
This will need to be examined.
H took it to his case of tools and sat down, spilling a drop onto a small plate. As he examined it, Rick shifted his weight nearby. So you agree it seems suspicious. It would be a hell of a coincidence, but I wasn't sure.
Suspicion is reasonable, but in this case, inaccurate.
After a strange pause, H set down the vial and shook his head.
I would need more time to analyze it fully, but I can tell that it isn't harmful. It's actually an exceptionally good elixir for improving growth.
That she'd just hand it out because she was impressed?
I don't know the old woman's motives. It may be that Regest was simply lucky.
Rick thought it was more likely that Alger had discovered the opportunity and sent his protege to acquire it, but held his tongue. There was something a bit unusual about the way H was acting. After a pause, H pulled out a cigarette, started to light it with a finger, then thought better of it.
This way.
He headed out to the roof at a rapid pace, so Rick had no choice but to follow. Once they arrived, however, there seemed to be no cause for haste. His mentor simply lit his cigarette and took several long drags on it, eyes unfocused on the horizon. Rick remained quiet for a while, then began repeating his exercises. Almost as soon as he'd started, H waved a hand back at him.
This isn't some nonsense test, boy. I'm just thinking.
H took a long drag on his cigarette, and when he spoke, the slow words came along with the smoke.
This vial, the encounter, meaningless coincidence. What matters is that Alger is moving more aggressively again. The timing is not the best. Things are looking ugly in China for several reasons.
Looking ugly? Rick asked quietly. He hadn't heard H talk this way before, and he didn't like it.
If it was up to me, this would all be about the events. Just people at the peak of human achievement showing their skills. But there have always been those who like to play games with the competitions. Alger plays to amuse himself, and it would be better to ignore him, but sometimes he gets others involved. This time, he's dragged in some of his rivals.
That's a lot to deduce from one encounter.
It wasn't just that.
H finally turned just slightly to look at him, exhaling a long stream of smoke.
You need to understand, the immortals are a bit of a clique. They pay more attention to one another than to anything else. The problem is, the money for your training is ultimately coming from one of them, and he's gotten disgruntled. If Alger is being active, maybe there's a good reason for it.
Rick blinked in surprise. An immortal? I'm sponsored by an immortal.
Only indirectly. Authority is delegated to me, and I chose to take a risk on you. But now, he thinks his honor has been besmirched, and he demanded that we throw everything we have toward winning.
Win what?
I'm not sure yet. I'm going to need to leave you in order to talk to him.
H abruptly took a deep breath and converted his cigarette to ash, which he inhaled.
Here's what I suspect. When the showdown heads to China, several immortals, including your patron, will make a bet. That bet will involve you, and much sooner than I'd intended to put you into a serious conflict.
I understand. Rick didn't feel like he grasped the deeper conflicts, but the end result was comprehensible. I can keep working on my instincts and footwork alone. Can you leave me some techniques to practice while you're gone?
That's one of the things I've been thinking about. It's too early, but I suppose it's time to give you something special. Come on, this is enough sightseeing.
They headed back in, this time directly to H's room. He waved a hand, and some sort of illusory barrier Rick had never noticed before disappeared, revealing a security safe. Bending down beside it, H inserted both a key and a complex weave of aura too quickly for Rick to catch. It opened briefly enough for H to remove something, then he dismissed all of it just as quickly.
I thought I was jumping the gun getting these yesterday, but now I'm glad I did.
H turned back to him, revealing that he held three crystalline spheres. Though they shimmered strangely and seemed to be made of some sort of ethereal material, all Rick could think was that they were exactly the size of the balls he'd been using to juggle.
These are a weapon, a physical focus for the Lucor you'll be developing. It's too early to give them to you, but I'll have to trust you to be responsible because I might not be around when you need them.
I can try to make that decision, but I'll need to understand their actual purpose first. Rick started to reach out for the spheres, but H shook his head.
Not yet. These are the opposite of the training spheres I gave you. Instead of disrupting your lucrimasole and distracting you, they'll reinforce your body and hold technique flows for you. It's a similar principle to the sorts of lucors that are implanted in people, but these start out empty. It will be up to you to fill them.
That explained why Rick didn't feel any lucrum from them, just ether. Except it wasn't quite ether either, something that was beyond his pay grade. In any case, that was irrelevant to what he needed now. So I'm not supposed to use these until I can use aura to juggle the training spheres?
And not until you can do it well, while fighting. This isn't a joke. These things are powerful, but they're more fragile than they look. If they resonate the wrong way, on accident or not, they'll shatter. And believe me, I do not want to pay for another set of these.
But you're giving them to me now because of what you said about filling them.
Exactly.
H picked up one of the spheres and raised it to eye level, looking through it.
Right now, these are hollow. The next phase of your training was going to be slowly building Lucors to be hosted inside them, but you're going to have to start now.
Each one of those will hold a technique? Rick began to get over the strangeness of it and thought back to their original conversation about training. Let me guess, is one of them going to be a sensory technique, and another one something for ranged attacks? H grunted.
You're not stupid when you try. I have an exact technique in mind to improve your sensory abilities, but there's no time to teach it now. The ranged attacks, I haven't figured that out yet. It would have been easier to do the Midas Foundation, but that ship has sailed, especially with our time limit.
What about the third sphere?
That one is going to reinforce your greatest strength, your defensive core. Like a secondary Lucor, but instead of interfering, the two will support one another. Eventually, this one could replace your original defensive core, but there's no time for that either. Anyway, this is the real reason I'm giving you these. If you want to have one ready, you need to start now.
They sat down, and H explained how the process was supposed to work. For the first time, he handed Rick one of the crystal spheres. It was slightly cool, but generally unremarkable, like it was just a knick-knack. Yet the process to use it as a Lucor proved to be surprisingly complex, building on the standard exercises with an entirely new layer of training. Manageable for him, yet it wouldn't have been imaginable several years ago. I think I understand the basics. Rick held the sphere carefully, trying to imagine it filling. Instead of building a Lucor like it's a building, it's like starting with a grain of sand and adding layers of paint until it becomes a sphere.
That's lazy anthropomorphism, but close enough.
H took the sphere back from him and glowered at it, as if he could intimidate the inanimate object.
When the process is finally done, instead of being clear, the sphere will be pure gold. That's one of the reasons this technique is called the Triune Golden Spheres.
Triune? So the fact that there are three of them isn't just because we need three techniques?
No, it's essential to making them work together. When you finally get it, they'll rotate around one another, and your aura will just keep them spinning, similar to juggling. Except, unlike juggling, you have three, and only three. Once you have all three techniques adequately developed, to advance you'll need something more drastic. Perhaps then we'll talk about dissolving some other cores or remaking your foundation.
Rick didn't want to reopen those conversations, but fortunately H was too busy to argue much. Instead, he decided to focus on a more immediate question. I'm not going to be actually juggling these, right? Will I have to be holding them in my pockets or something?
If you don't wreck the technique, they'll be inside your soul.
H jabbed him in the chest with one finger, then dropped the spheres into his hands.
Think you can handle all this?
I understand the technique, but the amount of lucrum that will be required to build a new defensive core layer by layer.
I had plans for that, too. It may be too early, but you'll just have to tough it out.
H walked to the fridge in his room and opened it, to reveal nothing but glass bottles filled with a glowing golden liquid.
This is something you can't talk about, because it's not available to the public. It's a special formulation of elixir and serum called Formula T, and what matters to you is that it's perfectly suited to developing the Triune Golden Spheres.
If it worked similar to Philosopher's Elixir, Rick was staring at a fortune in lucrum, more than he needed. Yet he had barely begun to formulate questions before H spoke again.
The problem with this is that it's rough on the body and on the soul. Those supplements I've had you taking, most of them were just to toughen you enough to take the Formula T. Unfortunately, you're not quite ready. So when you first take it, you'll feel a strange buzz, and there may be a few other side effects. Now, what's absolutely essential is that you always take the exact amount prescribed. Take too much or skip one drink, and your progress will suffer for it.
I see. Perhaps we'd better go over all the details then. H found a sheet and scribbled down a little information, promising to send him a clearer schedule later. It seemed simple enough, just one cup every 8 hours, but the fact that this Formula T had so many potential risks left Rick nervous. But there was no time to think about that. H was turning to him with a serious expression.
I need to make arrangements. I won't be available if there's an emergency, so keep to yourself. In 2 weeks, someone, me or somebody else, will come back to get you when the showdown moves to China. Understand?
Though Rick wanted to ask about all the other details, H was obviously done talking.
I understand. I'll try to exceed your expectations when we next meet. You'll have exceeded them if you don't kill yourself somehow.
With that, H turned away and began a whirlwind of activity. He didn't seem to need to pack anything, just grabbed a few of his supplies and then dragged the entire invisible safe along with him. Rick stayed out of the way, intending to say farewell, but H stormed out too quickly. Suddenly, he was alone with 3 crystal spheres, a supply of dangerous elixir, and nothing to do for 2 weeks but train. Rick found himself smiling.
Chapter 15. Riding the Wave. The first time Rick took the Formula T, he was more than a little anxious. It started with a flow of strength through his system, similar to Philosopher's Elixir. He quickly sat down and focused on the exercises he'd practiced, drawing the flood of new power into a single point. But instead of gathering it within himself, which immediately made his aura recoil, he held one of the crystal spheres in his lap. He watched it at first, but found that was only distracting him. Instead, he closed his eyes and turned all his new ability to focus toward a single objective. The first step in developing the triune golden spheres was the most difficult, and if he failed, it would set back his development at least a day. When he thought he was finished, he kept his eyes closed for a while, not wanting to see if his sense for it was right. But he was too restless to sit still, so he opened his eyes and looked down at the sphere. A spark of gold gleamed in the center of the crystal. Rick breathed a sigh of relief and brought it closer to his face to examine. It felt a bit strange. Though it was slightly linked to his lucrimus soul, it felt separate, like the few times in his life when he'd had a lucor extracted. But what mattered was that the heart of it was stable. Now he could layer more and more lucrum onto that spark until the technique was ready. Curious how it would appear, he opened his portfolio and made sure it had registered the new lucor. It appeared in a new block in his portfolio. Triune Golden Spheres, 250. Defensive Sphere, 250. Second Sphere, 0. Third Sphere, 0. Apparently, the technique was already registered by the app, even down to knowing that the second and third spheres were missing. Rick smiled appreciatively and found himself tossing and catching the sphere before realizing that was reckless. He carefully set it down in the plush case next to the other two. Maybe it was just the fact that he'd succeeded, but Rick found himself flush with energy. He headed into the main training room and tried to do his footwork, but he was too pumped for it. Instead, he ended up shadowboxing the air, using controlled bunion steps to flash around the chamber and fight imaginary opponents. Despite having tried to pour all his new strength into the lucor, he still felt strong, overflowing with lucrum. Rick ended up leaning against a wall, gasping for breath, and laughing for no reason. He realized that he was letting it get ahead of him and summoned all the mental discipline he could to calm down. The rush from the Formula T was clearly a bit too much for him, and he understood why it would be unwise for someone to drink it without preparation. He wanted to try it again to see if he could master the effects, but controlled himself. Now that he had started taking it, he needed to follow the strict regimen of every 8 hours, or it could damage his growth. So Rick settled down and forced himself to go through all his other training. As the days passed, Rick threw himself into training like never before. Once he got past the initial rush of Formula T, he found that it left him with a shocking capacity for concentration. When he attempted to rotate the rubber balls with aura while moving, they circled easily. He could juggle the resistance spheres, too, their perturbations no longer seeming so disruptive. Doing both at once was still beyond him, but he continued mastering both components. Every 8 hours, he got another rush of lucrum and sank all of it into the crystal sphere, eagerly watching the golden speck grow into a small sphere. The visible rate of growth slowed as it grew larger, but he could still see it expanding. Its growth was almost shocking every time he checked his portfolio.
He decided he would have to ask H if the numbers didn't tell the whole story, because some days the listed value of the sphere grew by nearly 1,000 lucrum. Or perhaps that was just the result obtained from using top-tier skills and supplements. Rick became obsessed with that number, striving to reach 1,000 lucrum in growth on a daily basis, then more. He looked back to calculate the average, and then his new obsession became getting the overall average above 1,000 as well. That proved more difficult, but he threw himself into it relentlessly, eagerly treating each dose of Formula T like it was a battle. He maintained all his other disciplines, which seemed dull by comparison, but he managed to focus on them anyway due to his formula-induced crystal-clear focus. The supplements tasted horrible, but he forced them down because he knew they were keeping the Formula T from overwhelming his system. Even Philosopher's Elixir was no longer the rush it had once been, but he drank what he had been given so that the growth of his other cores didn't slack. The slow progress was boring compared to the Triune Golden Spheres, but he needed everything he could get. For days, Rick didn't go outside, barely even looked outside. There was nothing but the desperate attempts to increase his average so that he would be ready for the fight. No, the incredible results were worth it for their own sake, because it was a rush like few training sessions before. One day, he received a text from Melissa. It was followed by a drawing of him with a duck's head, clearly a reference to one of their old jokes. Rick laughed, but then he paused. As he looked back through his phone, he realized that he hadn't been texting Melissa as regularly as he once had. He'd never ignored her, but he hadn't sent articles or many texts of his own like usual, in part because he hadn't read any articles lately. Rick sat back and slowly came to the realization of just how much he had been neglecting. The most obvious was that he didn't remember if he'd been eating enough. He'd forced down some tasteless nutrient bars, but it might have been most of a day since the last one. When he looked at his training, he noted that his restless shadow boxing was good for improving his high-speed footwork, but he hadn't progressed as much retraining his base instincts. Was the drawing just another joke, or was it hiding something else? Rick obsessively read back over Melissa's recent texts, feeling a sense of guilt. Leaving aside training for part of an hour, Rick spent a while photoshopping his sister punching a duck. It was silly and useless, and that was exactly the point. But the number of emoticons she sent back, a truly excessive number, made it feel worth it. More importantly, she texted back right away, and they chatted about anything and everything, making sure to catch up. Though their conversation was encouraging, and they scheduled a video chat for later, Rick found himself restless once it was over. He resolved to master his next training cycle better, but when he started to get out another bottle of Formula T, he realized that it was too early. Over 3 hours too early. Wincing, Rick set it back down and forced himself to the far opposite side of their suite. He'd been ecstatic over his progress, but now he understood why H had said he wasn't actually ready. Though he might be strong enough to make use of the Formula T, he was still too weak to drink it without consequences. If he wasn't careful, he could easily overdose like a power addict. So as Rick continued working over the next several days, he forced himself to balance training with other mental activities. He made sure to reply to Melissa frequently, but also explored any curiosity that entered his mind. One day he spent almost an hour reading up on plasma ants, trying to figure out which tribe the old woman had referenced. It must have been a tribal secret, however, because he couldn't pin down anything specific. In the hours when he couldn't train and didn't have anything to occupy him, Rick found himself growing paranoid. Melissa mattered more to him than anyone in the world, yet he'd almost neglected her. He thought that he was capable of handling the power, but what if he couldn't objectively evaluate himself? It seemed like H definitely knew what he was doing. All his preparations had been effective, and he'd warned Rick that he wasn't quite ready. But that didn't mean that Rick could necessarily handle it. Yet, with his mentor gone, Rick wasn't sure who else to turn to. That eventually brought him to Lisa. She'd replied to his email at some point, polite overall, but not exactly inviting further conversation. It bothered him, and part of his mind said that it would be bad to contact her when he needed something. Then again, she was the only professional he knew.
After going back and forth for a while, he started writing an email. He almost deleted it, but saw that it was still hours until his next training session. So he cut out some of the stuff he thought was too personal and just told her the basics about the Formula T in formal terms. Most likely it would interest her, he hoped. Eventually, he sent it and tried to forget about it. Less than an hour later, he got a response. "Can I see a sample?" There was no real way to send her one, and Rick thought that might be violating H's trust. Still, he could definitely send her a picture, so he did so. Surprisingly quickly, Lisa requested a video, so in the end, despite his nervousness, they set up a call. To make it clear that everything was strictly professional, Rick had both a bottle and a glass prepared.
"Hi, Rick."
Lisa saw the liquid, and her eyes narrowed.
"Can you hold it closer? Swirl it around in the glass and let me see how it moves."
She went on to ask him several questions about the taste, texture, and effects. When she was finally finished, she was silent for an uncomfortably long amount of time. "Is everything okay?" Rick asked. Lisa gave an odd shrug.
"I don't know what it is, but that's ordinary for proprietary drugs. The questions were just trying to learn what I could about the basic properties. Have you been following the training regimen exactly? I know you need strength, but trying to rush..."
"I've been following every instruction exactly."
"That's good. The more potent the compound, the greater the risk of a negative reaction."
Lisa sighed and smiled at him, the expression transforming her face.
"I'm glad you're okay, Rick. I worried that being in the showdown might be bad for you, since it... Well, you don't need me to judge you."
"No, I understand." Rick rubbed his face roughly, then set the glass and bottle out of sight. "I've been pretty obsessive over the last few days. I think the Formula T improves concentration, but it also gives me tunnel vision. Good for training, but it's left me feeling a little unbalanced."
"Rick, my concern might be unwelcome, but please listen. Be careful which events you participate in, and don't take any serious risks. I don't have any showdown clients, but some of them talk about the elite levels of competition. Those can be brutal on a person."
The obvious concern was touching, though it brought up more tangled feelings within him. Rick settled for nodding. "I know, but my sponsor is completely clear about how he wants to earn money on me, and he's been fair so far."
"Who exactly is your sponsor?"
Though Rick explained what he knew about H, when he started talking about the unknown immortal who was his ultimate sponsor, Lisa began to frown again. He winced in anticipation of a lecture, but instead she simply shook her head. Her expression looked more sad than anything.
"It's good that you're going to find out more, Rick. Once you get a name, look him up, especially his history of past contestants in the showdown. Make sure that your interests are actually aligned."
"What do you mean? They want me to be in peak condition for the competition."
"It's not that simple."
Lisa hesitated awkwardly, but when he gestured for her to go on, she marshaled herself.
"It's a common misunderstanding that being in peak physical condition means you're perfectly healthy. But the question is, peak condition for what? Their goal is to absolutely maximize your performance over the course of your athletic career. It's not to make sure you're comfortable in old age."
Rick frowned as he considered it. "You think they'd give me supplements that would harm me in the long term?"
"No, I'm not even talking about that. It's fundamental to the work. Some of my clients have wrecked lower backs, and it's common for athletes to destroy their knees by the time they're 30 years old. Not because they trained wrong or had an accident, but because the techniques that use up your body are more powerful than those that hold back to preserve it."
"I guess I understand that, but what about the immortals, or the godweights and other world powers? I don't think they're limping around suffering from centuries of injuries."
"Because they have obscene amounts of money and have improved their bodies in a fundamental way."
Lisa took a deep breath and tried to smile at him.
"I'm not saying you need to quit, Rick. You're probably better able to endure it than most because of your defensive core. But that alone might not be enough. Do you have any other supportive Lucors?"
Though he hesitated for a moment, Rick decided to tell her about the dark blood kettle. To his surprise, Lisa was extremely interested in the topic. Apparently, there were various differences between traditional and modern techniques. Plus, she knew much of the history of native techniques and how they'd been adapted across the United States. According to her, many modern techniques were clearly superior within a specific range, but lacked subtle minor advantages. His defensive core probably wouldn't keep him from getting sick or getting repetitive stress injuries, but the dark blood kettle might. She emphasized repeatedly that it alone wouldn't keep him from ruining his body in competition, but she seemed relieved. Talking with Lisa proved enjoyable, though he shouldn't have been surprised, considering how easily they'd spoken before. He didn't ask her about her dating life, and there were occasional moments of awkwardness, but he realized how much he didn't want to lose her as a friend. Beyond any direct help she offered, he was just glad to talk to someone with such broad interests. Unlike H, who was all business, or Ragest, who only cared about training, Lisa could speak intelligently on far more topics than he could. In a way, he was surprised that she wanted to talk to him at all, but she seemed to enjoy the conversation as well. But in the end, Lisa glanced down to the corner of her screen and winced.
Rick, this has used more time than I really had. It's been fun, but I need to go.
Sure, I understand. Abruptly, he realized that he didn't want to let it end there. Listen, I've been missing that specialized serum you created. Is there any way I could buy some?
Possibly. I've been improving it since we last talked about that, and I actually have some sales, though it's all small batches. But do you even have an address I could send to?
No. But we're headed to China next, and we should be there for a month, so I can send you an address then. About payment, I'm happy to pay the normal price, but would you want to see some of the formula T? Could you learn something from analyzing it? Lisa stared for just a moment, then gave a bright smile.
Check to make sure you won't get in trouble, but that would be really great, Rick. Normally, I can't analyze top-tier supplements without paying huge fees, so I've been struggling to improve in some ways.
Great. My schedule might be unstable because of some stuff coming up, but I'll definitely get in touch as soon as I can. Soon after, the call ended, and Rick was left staring at the blank screen. It had been nice, yet he was still kicking himself for not pursuing Lisa when he had a chance. There was a chance that she'd break up with Trenton or whoever, but it would be shitty to think that way. No, he needed to be a good friend or he'd ruin it. His gaze floated down to the date and time. There was still an hour until his next scheduled training session, but Rick got up and began focusing on his footwork. If he was pushing himself to the limit for this, he wanted to get every scrap of benefit he could. Chapter 16. Incomplete Golden Spheres. When local news began to report that the showdown was leaving, Rick should have been more concerned. He wasn't sure how H had paid for the hotel, but if they started demanding a bill from him, there was no way he could afford the whole training suite. Occasionally, he entertained ideas about what he would do if he was just abandoned there. Yet, ultimately, it didn't change much about his life. Rick packed up his suitcase and everything else they owned in the hotel, and otherwise just focused on his training. He'd found his limits for layering more on the Triune Golden Spheres every day, so it was just a matter of how many days he had. Otherwise, all he could do was continue focusing on polishing whatever skills he could. Fortunately, 2 days after the showdown left, he heard a helicopter on the roof. H swept into the chambers soon after, gesturing to him.
We're running late. Say goodbye to South Africa and get moving.
I feel like I never got to say hello to it. Rick grabbed his suitcase and was ready to go, which he thought impressed H just a little bit. As they headed out, he looked over the city one last time. How often does the showdown return to a location? Will we be back?
Not in the near future. Five nations host a month every year. Other major powers host roughly once every 3 years, and everyone else just hopes. Within each country, different regions bid to host a showdown, so only the biggest cities get repeats.
Though Rick stared out over the rooftops and wondered at opportunities lost, H was obviously impatient. They walked up the ramp, the helicopter blades already beginning to spin. This time, the bay door didn't stay open, closing before they lifted off the ground. Once more, the strange aura descended, muffling the sound of the helicopter blades. The power of the movement also seemed distant, a surreal sense of being separated from the world. Rick wasn't certain if he hadn't noticed the first time or if his senses had improved. H walked to the opposite side of the main chamber, turned to face him, and folded his arms.
Here's what's going to happen. You're going to participate in the unlimited defensive ring as planned. If you don't distinguish yourself, your patron will be severely displeased. But if you do, that just means you have to participate in a private contest between the protégés of several immortals. I hope you've been preparing enough, because if this doesn't go well, it will reflect poorly on both of us.
Are we going to fight in here? Rick asked. H scowled at nothing in particular.
We can test a thing or two while flying, but otherwise there's too much risk you'll clumsily tear a hole in the side. Now, let's start with seeing your portfolio.
Rick nodded and started to get his phone, but H simply brought up a screen to display it. Name: Rick Hunter. Ether tier: 12th. Ether score: 449. Lucrum generation: 89,350. Enhanced generation: 100,850. Current lucrum: 17,200. Rick Hunter's Lucrum portfolio: Foundation: 3,700, level 6. Dark Blood Kettle: 17,600, level 4. Triune Golden Spheres: 11,500. Defensive Sphere: 11,500. Second Sphere: 0. Third Sphere: 0. Offensive Lucor: 13,800, level 7. Defensive Lucor: 37,600, level 9. Bunyan Step: 15,900, level 8. Graham's Stake: 26,025, level 4. Demonic Bond: Buffed Gage and Yithsil: 800, stage 1. Demon Mass: 500, N.A. Total Lucrum: 115,425. Enhanced Total: 126,925. H stared at the numbers for longer than before, then cast Rick an odd glance.
Have you been taking the Formula T more frequently than prescribed?
I never once took it a minute early. He decided not to mention how tempting it had been at times, especially since so much seemed to be on the line. After staring at him for a while, H accepted it with a low grunt.
Then it looks like your compatibility is better than expected. Let me see the sphere.
When Rick presented it, nearly filled by the burning golden light within, H gave an approving scowl.
That's adequate. I negotiated the order of events to buy a little extra time, which should be just enough. The technique will be weakened without three different spheres, but it will be better than nothing.
You said we could test a thing or two in here.
We might as well see how far you've backslid on your footwork. No juggling this time. Let's spar in here, but touching the sides of the helicopter counts as failure.
Rick nodded nervously and raised his fists. Fighting in such tight quarters should have been more difficult. Yet as he used Bunyan's steps to flash around H, he realized that all his work on advanced footwork had significantly improved his ability to use the technique precisely. Occasionally, he nearly rammed himself into one of the walls, but he was able to successfully move in the small space. Until a foot hooked his, and Rick slammed into the floor. H withdrew his leg and stared down at him.
Less adequate than your progress with the Triune Golden Spheres, but not as bad as I expected. I want to test your ability to multitask, but not here.
It's going to be a long flight, isn't it? Rick picked himself up, chin a little sore from hitting the floor, despite the fact that he wasn't injured. Is there more we can do to prepare?
I'm going to start teaching you the final step in actually using the spheres. Even if you've completely bungled all the other preparations, you're going to need to use them for real in the showdown. That means they can't be floating around in the air.
You said they'd be in my Lucrum Assol. Honestly, I really have no idea how that's going to work.
These spheres are extremely carefully built to be partially physical, partially pure lucrum.
H gestured for him to sit down and dropped into a cross-legged position without unfolding his arms.
It's the same principle as an aura leech, which seems to burrow into your body but actually exists in your portfolio. The difference, aside from not draining you, is that you need to be in control of these.
So I'm going to draw these in somehow. Rick pulled out the three spheres from their case and observed them carefully. They felt as real as the floor underneath him, but he assumed it worked somehow. What's the first step?
You've already taken the first several, but now it's time for your juggling to pay off.
H instructed him in the new technique, which was really just a variation on the old one.
Rick focused on letting his aura pulse in a circular flow, then carefully picked up the spheres with his aura and sent them spinning. Unlike with juggling, he made them spin horizontally, but with his full focus on them, it wasn't so difficult. There was a strange imbalance, since two of the spheres were empty and the third brimmed with lucrum. H told him not to get used to it, since his goal was balance, but for now they had no choice. One step at a time, Rick worked his way through the obstacles preventing him from mastering the technique. He was fairly certain that he would get it working by the time they arrived in China, but he could only hope that it would be enough. By the time they arrived, they had finished what training they could, and Rick was simply going over the necessary steps in his head. When H entered the cockpit to make final adjustments, Rick pressed up against one of the small windows to try to see what he could of their destination. What struck him first was that the urban sprawl he saw below was surprisingly small. He knew China had plenty of cities with more than 1 million people, but the buildings he could see were far smaller than Branton. Could part of the city be underground? Was he misunderstanding some sort of unusual buildings as forests and mountains? Strangest of all, Rick didn't see anything that looked like it might be a stadium, or at least certainly not a modern stadium. The largest buildings visible were a cluster of multi-story buildings to the east and what looked like a large temple complex to the west. It was all a mild puzzle until he saw tendrils of darkness rising from the ground, directly toward them. Rick flinched back, looked again, and then hastily moved to where H stood.
H, are you seeing this?
That's the landing gear, he answered without even looking. Traditional Chinese design.
Since when are tentacles traditionally Chinese?
At that moment, the helicopter blades stilled and something wrapped around them. Rick staggered a step as the entire vessel lurched, pulled out of the sky and toward the ground. Outside one of the small windows, he saw a line of darkness, more like pitch black ink than a three-dimensional object. Yet H still seemed completely calm, so Rick did his best not to react. They were pulled to the ground, then sideways. There was a final crunch of steel on concrete, then the inky tentacles pulled away, leaving them somewhere dark. Rick peered into the shadows and saw a neon sign announcing they were on floor B3. A parking garage?
We need to finish your evaluation, then take final steps.
H walked past him as the ramp came down, though there wasn't enough space for it to fully lower itself. Rick followed him, glancing around the parking garage, but finding nothing out of the ordinary.
Just what was traditionally Chinese about that? He demanded as they walked out.
H cast him a scornful glance.
Not human Chinese. Welcome to the city of Odiu.
As they left the parking garage, Rick began to understand. There were a few cars, but even more lucrum vehicles that flew. Some of those looked much more Chinese to him, either traditional constructs of gilded paper or modern planes of all sleek white curves. When they departed the parking garage, an attendant handed them a chit. An attendant permanently bonded to a demon. The markings around his eyes were different, including a tattoo on his forehead, but as Rick understood what he saw, he realized the truth about Odiu. Outside, they walked on an ordinary enough street, but many of the people he saw were permanently bonded to demons. He even saw a few of the greater demons physically manifested, though of course they took forms that were much less like Western demons. A few wore clothing he would have called traditionally Chinese, but many others wore clothes of shifting ink that he suspected was just as traditional for them. H hailed a taxi, which arrived driven by a man Rick at first thought was permanently bonded. Then he realized that the man merely had a high number of demonic tattoos covering his body. They should have conferred great power, but judging from how his generation rate felt like 10,000 lucrum or less, Rick thought that most of the bonds must have been overdrawn. Once they were in the back of the taxi, Rick finally looked over to his mentor for answers.
Odiu is a demon-controlled city.
No, Odiu is a demon city, and the human reflection came into being to feed from the real city.
Will the crowd be demons then? We can't actually fight in the demon realm, not in any meaningful way.
I'd forgotten you had that incident while working with the GLA.
H regarded him coolly, then nodded.
Yes, the audience will be primarily demons watching from their realm. As their realm is filled with aura, they will be much more interested in physical applications of Lucrum. That's one of the reasons that your rudimentary style has a chance during this showdown.
Yeah, I get it. Rick sat back, momentarily enjoying how comfortable the seat was. Then he recoiled from it. Does this happen a lot? I didn't think there were many human cities based on demonic cities.
It depends on a nation's relationship with the demon realm. It's very rare in the USA and not common here. Siberia and the Nokan Empire are conducting their own affairs. But we often visit a German demon-based city, or at least a European one. You didn't think the demonic legionnaire was called that for show, did you?
Truthfully, Rick had barely thought about her at all, beyond being Europe's godweight. Steering clear of demons had always worked well for him, so he wasn't sure how he felt about the knowledge that they had far more control in other countries. Then again, he also thought back to Buftgage and Yithzil. He'd had no contact with the two demon siblings other than their increasing bond, given the difficulty of communicating between realms. Having spent his budget of explanations, H refused to talk until they arrived at their hotel. It was much larger and nicer than would be expected for a town the size of Odiyu, but that made sense if it was mostly there to host human visitors to demonic Odiyu. He was surprised by how many people with combat lucors he saw until he realized that this must be one of the hotels the showdown contestants used. Then, across the lobby, he saw James Travis. The man's suit was as impeccable as always, but he brushed imaginary dust off his lapel and smirked. Had they been close enough, presumably James would have mocked, but H checked them in and pulled him onward. This time, they were housed in rooms on opposite sides of a hallway, near a gym they had to share with other fighters. Yet Rick saw his room was ether-reinforced, and it looked like they could schedule hours to claim the gym, so that would work fine. He'd barely set down his suitcase when H appeared at the door.
I booked us the first hours. Let's go and see just how far short you fall.
Sighing, Rick accepted that he wasn't going to get to rest just yet. They headed out to the gym, which was appointed with a variety of machines, even a stationary exercise bike that had a serious Lucrum engine attached. H ignored all of those and just walked out to the combat mat, then folded his arms.
Show me what you learned that isn't measured by your portfolio.
Rick had had the presence of mind to grab his equipment, so he began. He could keep the rubber balls spinning with his aura while fighting H, even when the older man began to actually attack. It took him off guard, since for so long H had only defended, but Rick managed to adapt without dropping the rubber balls at all. After pursuing him for long enough, H grunted dissatisfaction. Next, Rick showed how easily he could control the resistance spheres, his aura almost entirely smooth despite their buzzing efforts to disrupt him. H seemed marginally more accepting of this. But when Rick tried to keep the resistance spheres juggling, he found himself falling back repeatedly. He could focus enough to resist the spheres or enough to hold his own in combat, but not both at once.
It will do.
H finally unfolded his arms, leaned back against a no-smoking sign, and lit up a cigarette.
You still need to master actually using the Triune Golden Spheres, but you're not terrible at that, so you have time. What we need to do is emergency preparation to get you up to snuff.
All of this hasn't been emergency preparation? Rick asked. I've done days of training that pushed me to the limit before, and they helped, but I don't think they'd improve me enough to matter in the showdown.
Not training. You're training about as hard as you can handle, but you have other serious shortcomings that provide low-hanging fruit. All we need to do is pluck those, and you'll be far more prepared for the coming competition.
What's that?
Come this way.
H took another drag on his cigarette, then gestured for him to follow.
This won't take long. We'll get it taken care of tonight, then you can rest up for tomorrow.
Still a bit puzzled, Rick followed H as they went through a back corridor and took an elevator down. As far as he knew, there weren't very many ways to instantly increase your power. Getting implanted with a powerful lucor, of course, but that was extraordinarily expensive and not a good idea for a competition with a high skill level.
Maybe there were secret legendary techniques he didn't know about. When the elevator reached the ground floor, it kept going. Rick wasn't too surprised to see the number go to basement levels, but he hadn't expected the small hotel to have 6 basement levels. The doors opened, and he realized that he might be right. The other side was a bare stone corridor, not the plush carpeting of the hotel.
The barrier between realms varies over the world, depending on many factors. But in a place like Odiyu, of course they need reliable methods to get across. They're providing this as a courtesy to showdown contestants, but don't use it without permission.
We're going into the demon realm. His question sounded stupid when they reached the end of the corridor and entered a room with a tear through space in the center of it. The surreal blackness on the other side was unquestionably the demon realm.
Why? To get a demonic bond, of course. The fact that you're lacking a substantial one is a huge mark against you compared to all the other showdown contestants.
Rick took a step back and raised his hands. Wait a minute. That's not an accident. I chose not to...
Don't be a coward. Let's go.
With that, H grabbed his shirt and threw him through the portal into demonic Odiyu.